Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal prepped enchiladas, to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
This is Winners and Sinners, where we look back on the week that was, but with a few twists. Joining me now is Jess Kelly, News Talk's technology correspondent, and Off the Ball's Cameron Hill. Lovely to
Hello.
See you both.
Happy
Hello.
Friday.
Oh, what a happy Friday.
We've made it to Friday.
Yeah. There's no day like it, is there?
No.
Really? I think this point too, when you're just so close to the end of the week.
Yeah. I said to a few people, it was switch and go as to whether or not we'd make it this week. Do you know, because the evenings are dark. It's been just, there's been so much going on. And then it's Friday evening. It's here.
Yeah.
We've done it.
We did it. Congratulations.
Well done,
thank
everybody.
You. Yeah. Jess has rocked in with tea and I'm there.
Peppermint
That's
tea.
Exactly. I'm not even contemplating going out or doing anything this weekend. It's very much a, nah, we're staying in. We are just reveling in the fact that we made it.
Yeah. Sometimes, particularly in weather like this, it is the joy to have no plans, isn't it? The JOMO, the joy of missing out. And that thing that I think is a real middle-aged thing, when people say, what are you doing this weekend? And you say nothing and you smile. Because you're so excited
it's my
at the
favorite
prospect.
Thing in the world. Yeah. I used to get embarrassed when people, you know, on Monday mornings and everyone's like, oh, what did you get up for the weekend? And I'd be like, nothing. And it was amazing. And everyone else would be like, oh, I went to Timbuktu twice. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well,
actually, that comes to your winner this week, Jess, which is weirdly the cold weather.
I'm all about the cold weather because I think that if you go into any store now, they're already playing the Christmas music. There's this wind down, like focus, get to the end of the year, focus on that. And I wasn't in the zone until the cold weather started. And I have to say, I was working from home yesterday morning. I got up, I went for an early run and the grass was crunchy. And it made me so happy. Now, I still have no feeling in my feet from that. But there's something about that cold, crisp air that makes it feel properly wintry. And then you can lean into the joy.
It's the 21st of November. We've got weeks to go until Christmas. We're not in the wind down yet, Jess. There's a lot more to come from you in this station.
Listen, I know that. And believe me, I've been told multiple times from multiple people. But on every other front, I just think it's so hard. Like the week before was kind of warm and you just don't feel like it's winter on when it's like that. So I'm all about it. I also think there's been a lot of sicknesses going around. And I think the cold weather is good for the killing of the bugs as well.
Is that true or is that an old wives' tale?
I don't know, but I like to say it again.
So do I.
Like, oh, I'm not well. I'm like, well, the cold weather will do you good now.
There's a few head colds going around last week, as in the temperatures are doing us no good. I don't know if that's actually scientifically true. We'll have to ask Luke O'Neill someday. If you're listening, Luke, let us know. Is that an actual statement of fact or an old wives' tale?
Yeah.
Are you buying this, Colin?
Oh, I'm totally about that. I love, I'm a cold weather boy. I actually don't necessarily love summer for that reason. I find it very overwhelming and sweaty and sticky and not pleasant at all. Whereas if I can layer up at all, it's so much better.
No, but you see, the thing is, I disagree. I love summer, but my thing is, I want the seasons to feel like the seasons.
Sure.
This is why I'm happy that it's cold.
Yeah.
Because I think
you need winter to do winter.
When it piddles rain in the middle of summer, you're like, this is not what it's supposed to do in summer. I need the seasons to remain the seasons. Obviously, global warming isn't helping with that. But I do think there's a lovely psychological switch that goes off in my brain, as it has done in the last few days, when the weather drops, and as Cameron says, you layer up, you put your hat and your scarves and your coat the more, and you go for a walk, you get hot chocolate, and you just embrace it. It's so cozy.
But as well, when you do, as you say, the early morning run, if you do any sort of exercise or fitness or play sport in this, it feels so much more earned when you get back in. You can just toast and have a cup of tea.
Are
or
you trying
get
to make people
up.
Feel bad? Those people who haven't yes. been exercising this week. Is that what this slot is
I'm
actually
sorry,
about?
This year we work out.
Don't be
yes.
smug. Don't be smug cold weather exercisers.
We've
nobody
been comparing
likes
figures.
That.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah.
I do understand that sense. I love the long days. I love the brightness. I love heat. I love summer. I should be living in a completely different country. Yeah. But there is that moment, I think, when the clocks go back and you've adjusted and you've accepted the winter is coming, that you think, actually, you know what? It's time to move down a gear.
Yeah, but I think...
And it's to not feel guilty about that.
Yeah, I think when the clocks changed, the weather was freakishly warm. And so you feel like you're wasting evenings because it's dark and it's dry and it's kind of warm. Whereas when it's cold and dark, you're like, I don't feel guilty about being all snuggly on my couch.
No, I like the fact that like my work day is from 2 to 10, so I get all the sun before I can come in. Or if I'm working early in the day, I've still got that little bit of light before. I love a winter sunset. It's actually
I'm on my second sleep
thing.
By 10 o'clock and you're finishing work.
Yeah.
My God, you're like two hedgehogs, the pair of you.
I am.
Like
I'm
hibernation.
I do go into hibernation mode.
Why is this such a conversation point in this country, Colin? We've just killed nearly 8 minutes talking
That's
about
why
cold
we're,
weather.
We're at optimum fitness because we have these irregular sleeping patterns. I'm sorry, you know.
No, but Cameron, tips. Like working until 10 o'clock at night, that must be tough going.
Tricky. Not my favourite thing in the world, but, you know, we move on.
We move.
Yeah, don't be working in the media if you're looking for regular hours.
No, that's
just
true.
My top tip to anybody listening today, anybody filling out that CEO form, if you're looking for 9 to 5, this ain't the gig for you. Just going to put that out there. Okay, one other thing that we really love talking about, maybe more than the weather, is Irish football.
Yes.
And I am so happy to talk about it this week.
I can't believe that it's a week, more than a week ago since the Portugal game. And how great that was at the Aviva. I think things in Budapest on Sunday probably supersede that. But that feels like it's ancient history at this point. But obviously the huge moments for the boys in green and getting to the playoff. But even Scotland beat Denmark 4-2 in Hampden Park to qualify for their first World Cup since 1998. And Curaçao beat Jamaica to qualify for their first ever World Cup out in the Caribbean. They are the smallest nation to have ever qualified. Iceland before that. The third smallest, Cape Verde, have Shamrock Rovers defender and captain Pico Lopez playing for them. So there's all this sort of abundance of joy around international football. It's interesting when we, like, you know, obviously I live in sports, so that's it's funny looking at it from an outside perspective. But I was listening to Barney Ronay on the Guardian's football podcast this week, and he said if you ever wanted a signifier of how international football is treated compared to club football, the term international break is as clear a signal. Like it's an interruption from the main thing. It's not the main focus. It's this thing, this regrettable but inevitable impediment to the main action, whether it's the Premier League, League of Ireland, Champions League.
Not anymore.
No, but for a while it was. For the last decade, Irish football fans haven't had a whole lot to cheer about on the international front, and international breaks have come along like jury duty or an unskippable YouTube ad, which is we have to put up with this.
Was it not me and you that were talking in the Hard Shoulder studio last Thursday week before the Portugal game? I was looking for any glimmer of hope. I'll be honest, Cameron, you didn't have one for me. And I think I said, I cannot believe you have to give another 90 minutes of my life over to this evening. And then it was the best 90 minutes I'd had in ages.
Yeah, that was that basically killed off my job application to the Samaritans, that slot. It was not very uplifting at all. But now we're back. I mean, we are the greatest nation at football ever. That's been established. But just the capacity for international football to create core memories for young football fans in Ireland, much more so than the club game. I don't think you can have that attachment, whereas like you look at the rugby
this
weekend.
Why does it matter so much to us in this country?
I think it's a great unifier. I think when you see how even, we don't have to go into the weeds of this, but the various uses of the Irish tricolour right now, for it to be used for football and used in that sense is... It's an incredible thing, as it was way back in Italia 90 and at the 94 World Cup and when Ireland and Irish football was really strong. You compare it to this weekend where the Irish rugby team are playing the biggest test possibly of the whole year against South Africa, And people are behind it, but not in the same way. Football as this kind of cultural lingua franca for everyone in the world where we can compare ourselves to literally every other nation is a great way of feeling good about yourself. Like 59th
in the world. It's a great leveller.
It is. I also think it's because if you think about any kids that you've ever met, and if you have your own kids, you'll know that when a child is able to walk, one of the first things you do is you get a ball in front of them and they kick it. Now, it's not, obviously, they're not Ronaldo out there and whatever, but it's something that every child kicks a ball at some stage. And then, you know, thankfully in this country, it's gotten better in terms of boys and girls. But the school boy or the school child leagues and systems that are in place are improving. And it is that great leveller. It's not, it doesn't have the same connotations that rugby has.
It's not elitist, I think.
It's not the notions. It's something that is open to everyone. You can do it with your friend outside the house on the footpath. You can do it in front of thousands of people in the Aviva Stadium. And I also do think it's something for all of us to just invest our time in. I feel like the last few years, it's been all very heavy going. Everything has been so heavy going. And to have something like this that not only sees Ireland do well, but Ireland do well unexpectedly. Like I was getting my hair done the day of the Portugal match and I came home and like that, I was like, oh, another sport thing we have to watch. And I was in the door 5 minutes and Ronaldo got sent off and I was like, oh, lads, I'm in. I'm so excited. I've never been into anything so much in my life. And then we had the conversation at home. Harry was like, yeah, but it's the hope that kills you. I mean, because I was saying it'll be great now to come into the office and we'll chat about this all day Friday. And Harry's like, yeah, it's the hope that kills you though. I mean, on Sunday, it could all be over. And then on Sunday, we did well again. And he was
more
like,
than well.
Oh my
really?
God. I actually want to get an Ireland football jersey for the first time in like 15 years. And this is the first time in sort of our adult life that we've kind of not been tutting or eye rolling about the Irish football team. There's a bit of potential. But I also think it's important to acknowledge the conversations that were had a few weeks ago when we weren't doing well. And there was a lot of criticism and there were questions being asked of, you know, do we need to invest in sports psychologists? Do we take that side of the sport and the mental training as seriously as we potentially should do? And I do think for the players, from a psychological point of view, they will absolutely get a lift when they see what they've done to the country. And Troy Parrott in particular, when you saw, like, our Henry McKean was out on his street the night that of the last match, and you just saw the local pride. And I do think that makes a difference and it bleeds out then and touches everybody in some way, shape or form.
I did see a podcast, or I was listening to clips from a podcast with Roy Keane was in it and Wayne Rooney was in it. Did you see this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically Wayne said, like, it was a bit over the top, your reaction, i.e. the Irish reaction. Like, you didn't qualify for the World Cup. Why did you react like that? What do you say to that?
Well, the other side of it is I've heard England fans and English football journalists this week talking about, God, you know, England have had a really easy path through this World Cup qualifying campaign, and they looked at the scenes of euphoria for the Republic of Ireland and Scotland and go, God, why can't we have that? Like, why did we make it so easy for ourselves? We want to have a little bit of a struggle or a little bit of jeopardy. It's sort of like when you go to a restaurant and no matter what you get, if someone else on the table gets a pizza, you just want a pizza. The whole idea is that it's meant to be kind of miserable, because then the moments of joy are far more pronounced. And I think on the international front, it's felt twofold because it affects the mood of a nation, as we've seen. Like, we're still talking about it a week later.
All right, Wayne Rooney, don't be jealous, basically. Okay, you can go to the World Cup and do your thing. We haven't qualified. Give us our moment. That's what I felt when I saw it. Okay, the losers of the week. Cameron, you've picked out AI videos in your Instagram feed that you say are increasingly hard to distinguish from real videos. What are you seeing?
Well, full disclosure, to take you behind the curtain at Planet Cameron, my family on Instagram has an entire group chat solely dedicated to dog videos and the sharing and distribution and enjoyment of dog videos.
And to think I liked you, Cameron, to actually think that I thought that you were an interesting person. You're how not, wrong I was.
I know, you know.
I didn't think it, to be fair. Even, I always knew.
Hey, listen, even Einstein brushed his teeth. What can I say? But so...
You're a weirdo.
So anyway, we love sharing just videos of dogs doing stupid things, being idiots. It's great. And there was one a couple of weeks ago that was put into my sent in by my mum, and I thought, oh, this is great. And it was my brother, who's a few years younger than me, that said, you know, that's AI. And I said, what? And I would have thought that I had a good kind of radar for that, that I'd be able to pick up on certain things, particularly around hands or fingers or mouth movement, that maybe it wasn't, okay, well, that's obviously been generated. But I actually couldn't distinguish it until it was pointed out. And I've seen a few more videos like that now where I'm starting to struggle to differentiate between what's AI and what's an actual human or an actual animal doing something. And, you know, I'm 27 and I didn't think I'd be at this point, but I know there's a whole idea of Moore's Law and the fact that every 18 months, the capacity for these things doubles throughout its process and its accuracy and its output. So, and like, first off, is this bad? Is that a bad thing? I picked this with the mind of asking our tech correspondent and host of Tech Talk.
Like the dog video is possibly not, Jess. A friend of mine actually sent a video into the group this week, into the girls' WhatsApp group, and it was herself and an Irish actor locked in a very passionate embrace, which clearly hadn't happened because she's happily married with children, as is he, but it was clearly an AI video.
Yeah.
And we all got a great laugh out of it, and then we all suggested our own AI videos.
That's part
and
of the problem.
You know, so that was all, it was all pretty harmless.
No. It's not harmless. It's not harmless, and it's not okay. And
okay.
This is part of the problem in that we're normalizing it. And we're finding entertainment from it, and we're making it okay for this content to be produced. We are seeing politicians using AI to, you know, push their own agenda, to put out their own messages and all the rest. That's really, really bad. We are normalizing it to the point where people like you, Cameron, who are like, you're 9 years younger than me, you should be even more savvy than me when it comes to recognizing this stuff. But the issue is, you're so used to seeing it now, it doesn't just look as distinguishably different from non-AI content anymore.
But that's because the quality is so good now, isn't it? That it's actually really difficult.
Exactly.
It's not that we've got used to seeing these videos, it's that the videos have become so realistic.
I think it is both things because I think, yes, it's become easier to produce these videos in your fingertips. Like Google has this brilliant, like, fantastic from a technological point of view tool, VO3, and it's fantastic. You can put in anything and it'll generate a video for you in a matter of seconds, and the quality is class. So the quality is one thing, but we're also normalizing it. And I think that I genuinely believe this is problematic, and I am fed up seeing it on my own social feeds, but I'm more fed up by the people who are doing it thinking, ah, sure, it's a bit of crack.
Why is
it's
it problematic?
Because you're normalizing something that can then be used in a problematic face. So say, for example, your friend created that of her and an actor as a bit of crack. But what if somebody sent that video to her husband or her partner and it wasn't a bit of crack and it wasn't a famous actor, it was the man who lives three doors down the road?
I don't think she's interested in the man three doors down
well,
the road.
Well, that's okay. Mm. No, but
maybe that's a different point. No, I know what you mean. And the problem is, I suppose, we're getting to the point now where we're not going to believe the denials. And I think that's what's going to be dangerous,
isn't it?
That is
what's going to happen, yeah. And I think it's gotten to the point now, and for me anyway, and I'm sure everyone else will find their own line in this, but I don't trust anything I see online.
Mm.
I don't believe a picture that is posted, and this is going back years to the Facetune era and all the rest. That was the start of it. But now you're having people posting, oh, I got my bedroom done up, and what they're doing is getting AI to put a four-poster bed, a walk-in wardrobe and a big Notions bathroom in, and you go and you just see it's a standard three-bed semi-D like my house. Do you know what I mean? People are trying to... It's performative stuff online with AI, and I do think it's dangerous.
So is this a tech problem, do you think, Cameron, or a societal problem?
I think it's a bit of both, to be very boring and annoying with my answer. But I think there was, like, what struck me was just kind of, like, to be honest, how arrogant it was to assume that, sure, I'm going to be able to pick up when that's AI. Like, it's not that good. I'm able to distinguish between fake and real and pick out the classic traits, like I say, the hands, that's still not very good at hands. So I know when I see something kind of blurry or something with seven fingers that it probably is an AI generated video. And I think that probably goes across the board, that you're not, when someone says that's AI, it's not a sort of, by the way, just to let you know, it's a, you're an idiot. You fell for that. Like, that's the kind of the arrogance that is baked in, so that when, I don't know if you saw Don't Look Up, that film on Netflix about the meteor coming to crash into Earth, mm-hmm. and people kind of sneering at it in a kind of, that's way off. Sure, that's no problem to us. And then it actually hits. And I feel that was a real BC and AD moment for me a couple of weeks ago, that like, actually, I'm not able to distinguish this, and this is going to get a lot harder, and I should probably be more open and more skeptical of everything 100%. I say.
But then that's awful, isn't it? To think you'd be living in a world where you're skeptical of everything you see. You just presume everything is potentially fake.
We have spent the last number of years talking about fake news and mis and disinformation, and people had become very good at verifying sources. So, you know, going to, like, back in the day before Twitter became X, like verified profiles and small little steps that people, the average citizen, could take to verify the information they're seeing. It's very difficult now when you've got videos and photographs that feature people that you know, or you're seeing people like President Donald Trump posting AI-generated content with him in it. Like, what in the world is happening? And I really...
Is there any way to stop it happening?
No. The genie's out of the bottle. Like, that's it.
Can we go back to talk about football?
Yeah, can we please? I was just going to go and put a video of me and Jared Leto together this weekend and send it
don't
around the group.
Be part of the
and
problem.
Now I'm not going to do that.
Don't be part of the problem.
Okay, don't be part of the problem. Okay, to the other loser of the week, and that for you, Jess, has been the price gouging that we've seen. Is this in relation to the Ireland away game, by any chance?
Yeah. So I, like I said, I love a good bandwagon, and the buzz around the place, even in this office yesterday, I was getting messages and pictures of all the off the ball chaperoos standing around the TV shouting, waiting for the draw. I came out of a meeting yesterday morning at 9:30 and I had it in my head. I was like, I wonder now, how much will prices go up the second the country that we're playing against is announced? So I did a little experiment in that I went on to my Expedia, which is like just a booking site thing. And so for flights for two people from Dublin to Prague, plus a hotel for two nights, it was working out at €682. So that's for two people, two nights, two flights and all the rest. Then yesterday afternoon, after the draw was made, I went on to an airline and I looked for flights from Dublin to Prague. And so one way, this is just for a flight for one person, it was €325.99. That's one flight, one way for one person. And then the return flight, the prices started at €326.99. So all of a sudden you were talking at 600, 700 quid for a flight for one person, costing more than 4 hours ago when it was flights, accommodation and all the rest for two people.
But you know what all of those businesses will say? This
supply
is how
demand,
the market
honey.
Works. It's supply and demand.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, you can go in January if you want to Prague for a long weekend with your partner, and you can probably do it for €200, and nobody complains then that the prices are, you know,
but this
so
is,
low. We only complain in those small windows that these businesses say, well, those are the windows we have to make money, and that's why we can offer the flight in January for €30.
Yeah, and look, I get it from a business point of view, but like you and I spoke about this on News Talk Daily around the time of the Oasis gigs, the demand pricing, the surge demand and all that kind of stuff, dynamic pricing. I get it. But if you were, and I know some of them myself, if you're one of the Irish football fans who spent the last few years, even when we were absolutely rubbish, using your annual leave and using every spare penny you had to go around the world following the team. And now that we've got a real chance, and all of a sudden, the second the draw is made, you have to go and look at getting a loan or losing out. And that's before we even talk about getting your paws on tickets. I just think there's a real sense of ill will. Mm. And like the companies will say, well, look, that's business, baby. And I get it, but it doesn't mean we have to like it.
I know. And we look at the profits of the companies then, and then we really, really feel, well, actually, it's not justified.
And it's particularly exploitative of fans like that who, you know, have gone through what they would term as suffering, which is a word that I find somewhat problematic when you describe football. But the Odyssey is part of it. That's the whole point of this as well. Like, there's only something like 1,000 odd tickets for this game, but there will be far more than 1,000 Irish fans descending on Prague in March. And the point of it is that whether you're spending the money to go direct or you go, like, we went to a tournament a couple of years ago in France and we flew into Brussels and took the train down, and that was great. And everyone was sharing their sort of war stories of how they got there. I'm sure there'll be people like this for this game who'll fly into Cairo and take a hop across the Suez Canal and go around the entire Mediterranean just to get up to Prague, and that'll be hilarious. But the downside of what I was talking about earlier with international football is that it is a little bit of an opiate and it's addictive, and you're kind of blinkered in terms of the long-term financial consequences of taking something like that.
And you feel you deserve it. I had this conversation with my own husband.
And
you know,
when's it going to come again?
You went to Poland, you were there in Poznan, you had a desperate time. Well, so he says, I can't imagine it was that desperate, but the football was absolutely abysmal. And actually, you know what? You deserve this. You deserve this. You've earned this experience in Prague or in America, if we make it to America.
Mm.
But now I'm thinking about those prices. Maybe you can just watch it at home with me.
Exactly. That's another.
Are you going to go though, Cameron?
Oh, I'll definitely go.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Can't beat it. Okay, let's take a quick break, but lots more winners and sinners after this.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
You are very welcome back to Winners and Sinners with News Talk's technology correspondent Jess Kelly and Off the Ball's Cameron Hill. Anything else catch your eye, get under your skin, make you smile this week, Cameron?
Well, actually, I'm going tomorrow to, there's a huge gig in the Three Arena. My Bloody Valentine are playing, and I cannot wait to see that because I'm a big fan of them. In the last while, I got their Loveless album on vinyl. I've been playing the death out of it. But something that occurred to me, I've been to a few concerts recently, and concert goers, particularly of my generation, they're not good at going to concerts. There's no great sense of a community when you're in the crowd in sort of a standing area, especially. I think CMAT was on a podcast with Adam Buxton maybe a couple months ago and talked about this, that it used to be that you go to a concert and you'd meet people and you'd make friends and it'd be, oh yeah, they're into the same music I'm into. Whereas now it's like, if you're in a friend group that's gone along, that's it. It's hermetically sealed. You can't break in. Why are you talking to me? And why would I dance to music? That's so weird. And I really dislike that. I think that's so lame. I like the fact that you can chat to someone. God, they nailed that last song. I didn't think they'd do that and share that and meet people like that.
That's my worst nightmare. If someone coming over, a stranger talks to me at any stage, but particularly at a gig.
Really?
I will pretend to get a phone call. I'll pretend to hear a fire drill. I'll do whatever I can to get away from you,
why?
Cameron. Because I couldn't care less. I don't want
to. But why are you going to a concert?
You.
That's why Spotify and things.
Music, not listen to you.
But that's why Spotify and albums exist, so you can do that in your own time.
I can still have the live experience and I can do it in my own way. If you start talking to me, you're going to see the back of my head, or I'll go and ratch out and I'll be like, sorry, this boy won't leave me alone. He's annoying me.
So concerts for you are like public transport. That's what you view them as. Where it's like, I don't want to be touched by anyone on this. I'm just having to go through this.
I don't want to be touched by anyone at any stage, whether it's on public transport or not. But I don't want to be spoken to at a gig. If I'm going to a gig, I'm there to watch the gig.
Okay, right.
What about general talking at gigs?
No.
I wished. Yeah.
Oh, I'm fine with that. But talk, like, if you're at the bar or you're going to the Jacks or wherever and you bump into somebody, don't keep your head down and
I must not make eye contact with anybody. If you're in the bathroom or whatever, like, women would often chat if they're fixing their hair or whatever. That's fine. But if you start going, Jesus, the set list is great, like, I'd be like, get away from me. I don't want to talk to you.
Have we become less friendly?
Yeah.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the problem?
Yeah.
But that's like, that's one of our character traits.
Is it though?
No.
Is it?
Well, it was.
When?
Oh, for years, the Irish were always seen as a friendly nation. It was a friendly place to visit.
To Ireland and the Cade Mila Fault.
And abroad.
We're people who enjoy conversation, who'll pick up a conversation with a complete stranger, you know, be like, put my mother on the bus from Donegal. She'll talk to 4 hours. For 4 hours, the person next to her, and she'll never have met them before and she'll never meet them again. I think that was a real Irish trait. I really noticed it when I moved to London, that they just don't talk to each other. Nobody makes eye contact. There's no, you know, conversation on the tube. There's no conversation in line for tickets. We had that at home. I like that about Ireland. I don't want us to be less friendly.
Okay, well, look, I'll take it back. I don't know that we've become less friendly. I think there's a difference between being friendly. Like, I'll always hold the door open for someone and I'll do the smiling eyes of the, hey, how are you?
You don't mean it, though.
Sometimes I do.
Thanks for holding the door. How are you today? Don't talk to me.
I'll be like, good,
that's
thanks.
None of your business.
No, what I do is I do it in a sing-song way, and if I do it in a sing-song way, that takes up the time it's going to take
them.
You to walk by me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't have to engage in conversation. I can't do small talk. Maybe it's a deep flaw within me, but as I said, I swear to the baby Jesus, if anyone ever makes small talk with me at a gig, I just won't do it.
Okay, if you're going to the Bloody Valentine tomorrow night and you see Cameron Hill, please say hello.
Yeah, I wear a t-shirt with breeze. My face on it too, so you'll see me.
He would really appreciate it. Very finally, Jess.
Yes.
You've put your Christmas decorations up, I saw it, on your Instagram.
I have.
And you're making no apology
I'm not making no apology, and I'm also going to do a national plea. Please stop having a go at the people who embrace Christmas early. If it's not your bag, that's totally fine, but it is my bag. I don't need you to send the eyes rolling emoji. I don't need you to send me a ass stop message on Instagram. You do you. I'll do me. On we go. Happy Christmas.
All right, Cameron, you put up your Christmas decorations. You be nice to people at gigs and the world will be a happier place.
No,
that's basically what I'm getting. Okay. Jess Kelly and Cameron Hill, thank you for joining us for our Winners and Sinners. That is it from us here on The Hard Shoulder. We'll be back on Monday at 4 p.m. Have a fantastic, lazy, cold weekend.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.